This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3844, for Thursday, the 27th of April, 2023. Today's show is entitled 2022-2023 New Year's Show, episode 6. It is part of the series HPR New Year Show. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 121 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is 2022-2023 New Year's Show, where people come together and chat.
Can I do something personal real quick?
Depends on how personal.
Someone tried saying hello to me as if I'm somebody, and I talked over them because I was too afraid to lose my own train of thought, so I just would like to say hello back.
I said the famous Pookie is here, yeah?
Infamous, maybe? I think the only thing I'm famous for is being infamous. I'm a screw-up. But thank you. Hello. Seb, how you been?
Yeah. Me from some other year we won this.
I remember you from Seb as your screen name.
Yeah.
You're cutting in and out a bit. Is he doing that to anybody else or am I failing?
Here as well.
As for the beer topic, what I was going to say is, which country has the best beer?
Belgium.
America right now.
Without
Americans even can make some Belgians. It's unbelievable.
You reckon Belgium because of Fosdam and stuff, yeah?
Well, the U.S. The U.S. is doing with beer what Japan did with everything else. They see how people do it. They try it out that way without like prejudging it and saying it's wrong. And they put their twist on it and they combine what they've learned. And, you know, I mean, Japan did it with cars and electronics and Wagyu beef, you know, whatever. Watch Tom Selleck, Mr. Baseball, for that speech. But America has done the same with beer and has done really well with it.
I did have to laugh. I was at Fosdem a few years ago now, and there were a contingent from the USA, obviously, because it's a huge conference. And a few of them, it was their first time here. Oh, her first time in Belgium. And they were like, let's go out for some drinks. So we did. We went out for some beers. And of course, what they didn't realize was two problems. One, the lowest percentage of alcohol you're going to get in a Belgian beer, usually in a pub, is about 9%. Which is a lot higher. The sort of 4 to 6%, you know, that we're used to getting. Even in the UK, we usually top out about 5 for an average.
US, but then also, of course, well, the
American
one time I had
pints.
A belt. Americans yeah, don't have pints. We have 16 ounces. They're smaller. So you're right. It's a bigger beer, and it's
yes,
got twice
American
as much
pints.
Alcohol in it.
So we had a very merry bunch of Americans.
Plus,
wandering
despite
around
the fact that, you know, Pokey's right, this is one of the greatest places to get different types and really well-made and really flavorful beers, meads, basically anything you want. Most of your average Americans are still drinking piss water.
Good. Let them. It keeps the price down on the really, really good stuff for the rest of us.
Right. I mean,
you've got all this great stuff here.
And if you walk into a bar in middle America and you're a white guy and you order anything other than a Budweiser, you're probably going to start a fight.
You're supposed to say, it's not even Budweiser anymore. By the way, it's pronounced Pissvasa. The guys that I drink with drinks raspberry natty lights. Another guy drinks twisted teas. Another
well,
guy,
least,
like, you wouldn't believe what these guys drink.
At least it's flavor.
The what?
At least it's more flavor than your average Budweiser.
I don't know, maybe.
Okay,
no,
Natty Light is disgusting, dude. No matter what flavor you freaking put in it. But that's besides the point. At least it's not a generic Bud Light.
Yeah, but Bud Light is better than the gagging that I did on that.
Natty Light. Yes, okay.
The raspberry Natty Light. I never had a regular Natty Light. The raspberry Natty Light made me gag. I almost chucked it.
But they're all nasty.
You were saying, Pokey, you were saying about the Japanese taking things and excelling. I can attest that that was not the case with beer. And it's not because their beer is bad. Their beer is absolutely great. They do some amazing craft beers. But they do insist on putting about 20 centimeters of head on a glass, which is just fundamentally wrong. I don't want there to be more head than beer.
Not if you ask Tim Cook. So, are you familiar with Tim Cook?
I don't tend to ask Tim Cook. Mr. Apple. Tim Apple.
No, the other Tim Cook. And you Brits wouldn't ask. Because he was a patriot, damn it. No, Tim Cook is the brewer of Sam Adams. And his first commercials back in the It could have been late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s. I don't know. I was too young to drink at the time, but I heard them all.
Too young to drink. I want to say something after this. Carry on.
Difference in drinking age.
You got me. Okay, fine. That's exactly it. It's like, okay. Somebody said that the pint's smaller in America. I didn't realize that as well. But okay.
I don't know, like, I'm pretty sure the drinking age was 14.
It's like you can, in America, you're not supposed to drink until 21, but yet you can drive a car at 15, yeah? A car can kill people, yeah? You're the driver or other people on the road.
Look.
And also,
the drinking age in the US is 21, but I swear the drinking age in Iowa was 14.
Yeah, the drinking age in the UK is 18, but we all started drinking around about 14.
Exactly.
Sebastian, we're both from Bristol. We know what it's like in the West Country. You're raised on cider. It's in your veins.
But no,
you cross over from Somerset, and you've got nothing to do but, like, watch the combine harvesters go down through the field, drink your cider.
Time out.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing in Iowa, because it's all farm country out there. And the whole thing is I swear the state sport is drinking and driving.
Lots of states. Time out. Hey, Seb, you are causing a lot of feedback. Anytime you're keyed up and anyone else is keyed up, there's huge amounts of echo.
There might be. I don't know. Depends how it's set up.
Could be one of two things. Either you're not using a headset or you're using a stiff stick mic.
No, it definitely is. Anytime you're keyed up and anybody else keys up, it echoes back at everybody. It's definitely a thing. It's definitely happening. I can't tell you what's causing it, but it's very clear. It's like software clear, not headphones next to your mic. So it may be something in software, but it could be. If you're not wearing headphones, that'll do it too. But you got good speakers and a good mic, if that's it. Tack, you're too quiet. No one could hear anything you just said. I couldn't. Could you repeat that with a little more gain?
I prefer it that way, to be honest.
Don't want George speaking. You don't want to hear what George is saying. It's usually nonsense.
What the heck?
Oh, that was a good burn. George, I was interested, even if the guys who actually know you weren't.
Yeah, George, the British contingent were having a poke at you. But, you know, you couldn't shout over us. So.
Why? Why? You love me, Nate.
That's
because he's easy.
Just because his name is the Love Bug doesn't mean he loves you.
Well, I know you both hate me.
Hey,
you didn't get his worky. He has nothing. The Love Bug.
Yes,
you
know good evening, everyone.
He's here. He's quite working.
Good evening, the Love Bug. That is a really, really old, crappy version of Mumbled for it to work. I tried the Snap version and the Flatpak version of the most recent ones. Neither of them would work.
I assume certificate issues.
No, certificate was fine. I used the same certificate. I used the same certificate, but it was more the fact that the push-to-talk global shortcuts, whenever I click the add button to say, this is the shortcut I want to use for push-to-talk, it just didn't do anything. So,
I had that problem as well. I had that problem as well on the version from the Arch repository. I had to get the Git version from Arch, so I think they've broken something.
Yeah, it looks like it. Am I coming across
that's fine. It's probably user error.
You sound beautiful, Lovebug.
Oh, bless you.
No,
he's got an actual podcasting setup.
Yeah, you sound really like your levels are
set up.
Not blowing anybody out. I could hear, almost made out what you said, even when people were walking on you. And when you're the only one talking, yeah, it's gorgeous. What are you using? That is a beautiful setup.
Guys.
What mic do you got?
I'm using a Samsung Q2U, which is, I think, is the equivalent of the Audio Technica 2100.
It is.
It's a really, really nice microphone. Incredibly cheap. Probably works out well at current exchange rates, about 67 cents. But I think back in the day when we actually had a working currency, it would have been about $60, maybe $70.
I think this is one of the ones that Leo, that was formerly on Mintcast, was recommending, and it's actually on sale right now.
Samsung Q2U.
Q2U.
Thank you.
Samsung.
Samsung, yes. It's XLR and USB, so I'm using it through XLR for a mixer, but the USB option for it works really well as well.
Really? Does it sound just as good minus the mixer, or just almost as good? minus the mixer.
Well, I've never used it through USB personally, but my wife does when she does her work from home. We use the same microphones for our show, both going through USB for the mixer for the podcast. But when she's doing her own work, she just takes a USB cable from the back of the microphone into her laptop, and it just works, and it sounds brilliant.
Oh, this is for Americans. This is $99.99 at Walmart.
$55.59 on Amazon. Yeah, $55.99 on Amazon.
I don't want to kill you guys, but I bought the ATR 2100s about 8 years ago. I bought three of them for about $30. So they have gone up in price like crazy.
But is that just for the microphone, or is that the podcasting set, which is like your desk stand?
No,
that was the basic set. Right. Word of advice, forget the headphones. The headphones are beyond awful. Buy your own.
Yeah, okay. So, George, Tech, Geospart, when you spoke up and said that, the $33, you know, saving $20, $22, I would brag about that. If I were in your seat too, but from my seat, I just heard what yours sounds like compared to the Love Bugs. It's worth the extra $20.
Actually, I'm not using that mic.
Oh, nice save.
Oh, good save. Thank you. I didn't want to walk away feeling like I was mean. Thank you.
No, this is Exclovan or some weird off name brand drop mic. So,
but I'm sure I've got medication called that.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It looks like it does look a Medicaid thing. It looks like it's a pretty mic, but it's generic.
Did the Exclavan give you those weird dreams too, Love Bug?
Every single night.
I recognize you even from outside of podcasting. I think I remember you.
Speaking of prices, though, you know that whole $99.99? You know where that comes from? Why we do the 99 cents thing?
It's a psychological thing, isn't it? $99 is less than 100.
Yeah, but it's got what's the key? Spoffriff knows the key to why.
That's partially correct. So that's only one side of it. The actual reason is that when people make sales, and they would skip putting it through the register because it was just easier to not. But of course, if they have to give change, they have to open the register and record the sale.
So to force them to do that at the end of the day, if the register's off.
Exactly, because they had to reach in to get the change, and that's why they put it to 99 cents, because that was the closest they could get to the dollar while also forcing their employees to open the register.
Interesting. See, I prefer having round number things to pay. You know,
everyone would.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, some of our local supermarkets have started now selling things for, you know, £15 rather than £14.99. Well, you'd be surprised, actually, the amount of places that still only take cash.
I live in Germany, and they don't do card here. It's just cash.
Good for you guys. I just started doing carrying a little bit of cash again, and it isn't even all that much, and I almost never use it, but it's empowering. It really.
Well, yeah, an emergency stash in your pocket is always a good thing, but yeah, I haven't actively carried cash other than like having a 20 on me for a decade now.
Maybe so you want to get to the point where you have
what difference it makes to you.
Yeah, get a cash clip. Get a cash clip and bring that out when you come to pay for something, and you feel like a king, even though that's only, you know, 200 euros in there.
That's a good way to draw attention in a lot of the places that I've lived.
Yeah, but don't.
That's a good way to get jumped out in the parking lot.
I mean, yeah, but in Berlin, that's not really a concern.
I spent 20 years in El Paso.
I'm very sorry.
I will bring cash with me for Fosdem, but saying that, even at Fosdem, one or two of the stands may even take cards. This T-shirt stand for the event T-shirt and maybe something else.
You see, you say that, but when I was at Freenode Live, I went to try and buy, I told you about the Emacs manual that I have. I tried to buy that from the Free Software Foundation stall, and they were trying desperately to use free software to power the card readers, and it just didn't work. And I was just there like, I can go and get cash out. They're like, no, we'll get this working. It took an hour and a half.
Oh, you've been at Freenode Live, but obviously that was in Bristol, so yes, that makes perfect sense.
You know, you mentioned free software. You know what that reminds me of?
What's that?
Free software.
You know what it reminds me of? Free money, don't pay money software, yeah.
No, free isn't freedom. I was going to make a recommendation.
Sorry, what? Freedom? I don't understand.
Freedom.
What does that mean? Free as in freedom? I have no idea.
Oh, this is the time and the place, but at least let me get my recommendation out first, and then we can make this the time and the place for free versus free.
That conversation.
Yeah, please. Anyway, just in case anyone who hears this doesn't listen to Dev Random, and I'm sure no one who listens to this does, I found an awesome, awesome, awesome app in the F-Droid store for Android called FlavorDex, and it's built so that you can catalog and take pictures and do star ratings, and it's all personal. It's, you don't have to share it with anybody or take theirs. I would like there for there to be a way to be, but I don't know if there is. Maybe there is. I don't know. Anyway, and it's pre-built for whiskey and wine and beer and something else, but I've been able to make it work for pipe tobacco. I just added it as a category, and it's really, really nice. I did it on U-Random as our F-Droid Spotlight, which we don't always do. It's just every once in a while we'll find something and spotlight it. And this made the cut. This is an awesome, awesome little app.
What's the name of that again?
FlavorDex.
I have a story for those from the West Country of England. And again, and perhaps, although it may have been also, it may have originally come from Scotland.
Yes, now, go ahead.
Now that I think of it, it's a counter to your money clip argument.
A counter to the argument for the money clip or the argument against the money clip?
It was the counter to the argument for the money clip. An American went to Scotland with a Velcro wallet, and one of the Scottish people said, saw them opening it and hearing the traditional Velcro screech. Ah, yes, that's a good Scotch pocket. It screams when you open it.
Yeah.
Is that calling Scots cheap, or did I miss the joke?
Yeah, Scots are cheap.
I'm glad my touchdown co-host's on here this evening.
Not necessarily cheap. They just hate to spend money.
Okay.
Damn, right. Scots.
I do believe that's Scotland. Equivalent.
No, it's not the same thing.
Okay.
We have a common stereotype that the Scots are tight-fisted. It's not true from what I've experienced of Scottish people, but it's a funny little, you know, it's a funny stereotype. It's like a stereotype about, you know, people from the West Country always being drunk, except that one's true.
So the couple differences that I see immediately, not to be a Mike Hogg, but you can be generous and be happy to spend money on friends and family and still be cheap on a day-to-day basis. And you can also be thrifty or frugal and always go for like the best bang for your buck choice after doing some research.
You're thinking far too hard about this. They're just cheap.
I think too hard about everything. I can't turn it off. I'm sorry, fellas. I didn't mean to bring it down.
There's another story about Americans who have a certain fear of debt. This guy said that his father or grandfather borrowed $10 from a farmer, and he said the farmer never asked for his $10 back as long as he paid him a dollar a week.
Good deal, if you're the farmer or the other guy, really, if you're satisfied with that. I don't understand the point of the story, though.
He acknowledged the obligation, but he never had to pay the principal back, just the interest.
Yeah, no, I got that, but how did that relate to being afraid of debt?
That's basically America.
Yeah, it's like the total amount you'll end up paying is like $52 as opposed to just paying the $10.
Oh, yeah, I had $25,000 in student loans, and that's low. $25,000 in student loans is low. I've been paying on it for 10 years, and I'm at like $15,000, and that's only because, you know, we weren't required to pay for a long time, and I kept paying.
So what you meant was that Americans are afraid to acknowledge the existence of the concept of debt before signing on to more of it than they can afford.
Well, it's not a matter of signing on to more of it than you can afford. They sell you the American dream. The only way to get ahead is to go to college, blah, 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 get a better paying job, et cetera, et cetera. Now, granted, most of that is, you know, garbage. But what they don't tell you and what they do with 18-year-old kids that don't know any better with their finances is they do two things to put you in debt. One, they convince you to go to college that you can't afford to pay for. And in order to do that, you have to take out loans. And two, you're 18 years old, you need to be able to eat and dress, so they get you on a credit card. And then, hey, look, zero APR for the first 6 months, and then afterwards, 24%. And they don't tell you how that works until, you know, you're paying it, and you keep paying, and you keep paying, and the amount that you owe keeps staying the same.
The first part, you're 100% correct about. The second part can happen at any age, not just 18, and I think
right.
Four has been keyed up.
But I think it's predatory when it happens to an 18-year-old that has never handled their own finances before.
Yes, the things you listed are the bait, and the credit is the trap.
Yeah.
So I was just going to say, in the UK, we have the world's stupidest sort of student loan system. So we never used to have student loans. We had something called a student grant, and it was basically paid for by taxes.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, under the Blair government, I want to say, so Labour government, they introduced this idea of student loans. But so student loans can actually get extremely expensive in the UK. Like, you know, America, yes, you know, you're saying $25,000. My debt is currently £47,000.
Did he just cut off for everyone else or just me?
The reason mine is only $25,000 is because our only came out to $25,000 is because I'm a veteran and I'm a disabled veteran.
Right.
And I was getting money from the government to go to school. It just wasn't enough to actually go to school and live.
Sure. But I've got a friend who, you know, she went to, what's it called, Cornell, and hers is less than mine. You know, I'm just saying it's not this sort of hard and fast thing of like Americans always pay more. In fact, mine ends up being pretty expensive. Here's the joke, you see. Here's the joke. We pay interest on that every month. And you can, if you want to, start paying it down. But after 30 years, they'll forget the debt anyway. Explain that to me.
They want 30 years of payments from you.
You can actually stop paying, and they won't be able to find you most of the time.
Oh, here they'll find you.
Yeah, you were. Well, what he said, but I want to add in that also university, was it 9,000 to go to university, yeah? And I think Scotland get it free, don't they?
They do, if you're Scottish.
Yeah, if you're Scottish, yeah.
And if you're Scottish and you go to a Scottish university, or if you're Welsh and you go to a Welsh university, you get it for free. If you're English and you go to any university in the UK, you have to pay £9,000 a year because nobody likes you.
The Welsh has
except for one university, the one that I went to, the University of Hard Knocks. That's free.
Oh, nice.
Well, there's a cost. It's just not monetary.
It's the Knocks.
Indeed.
What's interesting with U.S. student loans is the bankers put them ahead of any other debt or payment system. You're on disability, they'll suck up your student loan.
They'll suck up your disability pay to pay off your student loans, yes.
It's a bit, yeah.
Child support, you can't anything.
You can't get rid of the student loans by declaring bankruptcy. You can't get rid of the student loans by dying. They will take it from your estate, and then anything left over goes to your family. They still owe.
I got rid of them by paying, but
I didn't.
Yeah, I paid them off early too because I got it down to a point. Mind you, I'm in my 50s now, so I paid them off in my 40s, which is rare. But I got to a point where I looked at it, and it was a certain amount. I'm like, I can afford that, and I just paid it all off. They were probably
get rid of that interest.
I may be at a point in my 40s where I earn enough money to pay off my student loans. But on principle, I will not pay off my student loans. I will wait for it to run out. I will stop paying it. The reason for that is that they changed the terms of the agreement after I signed it. So I don't see why I should have to pay them anything.
Unfortunately, I'm not one of those people that can...
20.
I just feel like, you know, they you know, the government changed the terms of the agreement. They changed the terms they changed the terms of how student loans worked after I'd already signed up for student loans. So that invalidates the agreement I signed. So theoretically, I've not signed any agreement.
Did you hear what they did?
Changed the term of the deal.
Here?
Pray we do not change them anymore.
Did you hear what they did to teachers here? Essentially, what happened was teachers require X amount of education, college education, of course, right? Well, the U.S. government offered to pay for said education if these teachers worked X amount of years for community schools, essentially. But you had to pay for it first. So you had to get the loans and pay for everything first. And then once these teachers went out and actually, you know, got the jobs that they were supposed to get in order to get this all paid for, they were like, no, we ran out of money. We're not paying anything. Enjoy your loans. Pay them back yourself.
Classic.
If I could just take the opportunity to quickly jump in. I'm going to take my leave. It's nothing to do with Joe Ressington having shown up. But the last time he and I were on an event similar to this one, we ended up talking about monetizing podcasting until 4 a.m, and I ended up with a hangover. So,
So you're leaving me now then?
No, genuinely, it's nothing to do with you, Joe. I would happily speak with you for, you know, the next 12 hours about absolutely nothing at all. But unfortunately, I'm falling asleep and my beer is just about to end.
Well, but there may be an after show to Lovebug later, so maybe you can turn up later.
Yeah, well, you'll still be on the go till midday, won't you?
I think I passed your numbers on Mintcast a while ago, Joe Rez. You should come back, hang out.
Have a great
day. It's been a long, long time since I was on that show, my friend.
Yeah, you should come back. We miss you.
I know, but I don't really use Linux Mint anymore or advise anyone else uses it. So it would feel somewhat hypocritical to come back on that show, I'm afraid.
Well, come back on and tell them why you don't like Mint anymore.
He uses Windows now.
Okay, that's crossing a line.
Well,
I just realized, Joe, I'm following you on Twitter.
We have a distro neutral podcast that he could join.
Yeah, we don't have good enough sound quality for Joe Rez on the Linux Lugcast.
Well, it doesn't matter about distro agnostic. I have an operating system agnostic approach. If you use Windows, good for you. If you use macOS, good for you. If you use WSL, good for you. You know, I'm not going to necessarily use those things, but if you want to use it and you're happy and you get your job done, then I'm not going to judge you. That's not a very nice thing to do, is it? To judge people's choices.
Not publicly.
Oh, of course, one can silently judge.
And I'm a freaking hippie.
Well, we are extremely distro agnostic on Mintcast, believe it or not. Yes, a lot of it is Mint focused, but we're talking about anything that's going on in Linux in general. Otherwise, we'd run out of things to talk about real quick.
Well, yeah, it's a podcast by the Linux Mint community for all users of Linux.
Yeah,
it's one of those situations. It's weird. Like, I follow you on Mastodon and Twitter, and yet I've never actually encountered you in a room like this. So, hi.
I think
hello.
You and I have talked before, haven't we, Joe?
I would imagine so, yeah.
On here? Last year, most years, or something?
Yeah, it's almost every year I pop in for a little bit because my wife goes to bed and I'm just kind of drunk and bored. So, yeah.
I'm kind of drunk and not bored. Is my audio back? Can anyone hear me this time?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sound great. Have you got what microphone have you got? It sounds amazing.
I'd have to look it up on Amazon. It's a little Sony stereo lapel mic. It was probably between $7 and $17.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds absolutely great.
Yeah, it doesn't like it's a clip mic. It's a little thing you'd clip to your lapel. So you've got to clip it someplace stable, and that's hard for me to do. So often you'll hear it bumping against my shirt. Like that, or sliding around, or something.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. But when it's in the right position, that sounds absolutely great to me.
Yeah, if you could clip it to a mic stand, you'd have a podcast set up. I mean, it's just a 2.5 millimeter plug. It's just, you know, you need a 2.5 for the mic and a 2.5 for your headphones, as opposed to a 4-ring 3.5 that does both, or an adapter. Right. It's just electrical.
Interesting. Yeah, well, sounds good as it is now. So keep doing what you're doing is my advice.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Speaking of monetizing podcasts, who here has looked into Castapod?
Not me, but it sounds interesting. Please tell me more.
Okay, so Castapod is a federated service. I know about them because I'm Funkwell maintainer, and they do podcasting like we do, but they do a lot of additional things. Like, they got a lot of additional features and stuff like that, such as monetizing podcasts. So it's Fediverse software, but it can do stuff like premium episodes and that sort of thing.
How does it monetize, and what kind of monetizing are we talking about?
Well, it allows for things, like I say, like premium episodes. So I imagine they integrate with payment providers in a standard way and then produce sort of subscriber-specific RSS feeds in a similar way to something like Substack. I don't actually know the technical details, but I'm guessing that's how they work. They also Patreon. Do stuff like...
Patreon is what Patreon. I use for that. Yeah, because Patreon, yeah. I upload advert-free RSS feeds, advert-free episodes to an RSS feed that people can...
Yeah.
And, like, Patreon takes care of all of the back end of that, and when people stop paying, like, the RSS feed stops working and stuff, and I don't have to do anything.
Is that what you're talking about, Sporif, the financial handling or the content side of it?
It's the content specifically. They don't handle payments. They integrate with payment providers. I mean, this is one thing you'll notice about all of us Fediverse developers. We do not want to touch payments with a barge pole. That stuff is far too complicated and needs to be centralized. It cannot be done in a federated way. The best we can do is
not yet.
There's another project. Well, there's
have you not heard of Boosts, my friend? Have you not heard of the Lightning Network and Boosts and Bitcoin and crypto? That's definitely the answer to this, and not total bullshit pyramid scheme, Ponzi scheme, or whatever. It's definitely the future.
Can you live on that, or is it just a way to get started?
That was sarcasm, and I do not recommend any of that at all. And I agree that payment systems have to be centralized and regulated. Otherwise, bad things happen long term.
Oh, thank you for clearing that up. Okay. That sounded sincere. Thank you.
The best that we can do, I mean, British people, it's hard to tell sometimes. We sound sarcastic all the time.
British humor is my favorite humor. Don't apologize for that, please. I just missed it. I'm 8.5 out of 10 tonight, maybe. Been drinking.
But the best that we can do is, I work on another project called Retribute, and the idea is that it uses your Fediverse information, such as you can log in with Mastodon or PeerTube or Funkwhale, and basically you can get a weighted list of who you've interacted with. So in the case of Funkwhale, it's what artists have you listened to most. In the case of Mastodon, who have you interacted with most? PeerTube, who have you watched most? And then it basically aggregates those into a list and gives you links to their payment providers that they have put in their profile or in their, you know, associated links. And the idea is we'd like to build on that to be more of a, a tool that can use, you know, put in place budgeting and stuff like that, just to make, you know, that kind of user-driven donation model more readily available and apparent in the Fediverse. But what Castapod do is more traditional. They do sort of they have Patreon, Substack. They have this paid RSS feed for specifically paid content, paid episodes, and they also, I believe, do they have the ability to add things like region specific advertising. I believe is the thing they can do.
Oh, have you heard that personally?
I get a lot of it because I live in Germany, so my podcasts that are in English get disrupted by Germans talking about was großartig ist, and I'm just like, oh,
yeah. Gosh. When's the first time you noticed that?
Oh, it's been there for ages. Like I've noticed it. I think I probably started noticing it around 2017, 2018, something like that.
Okay, because I was thinking I only heard it maybe a year and a half ago. Impressive.
It's becoming really big,
dude. I'm sorry, I hate it. But that is impressive tech that your podcatcher, you know, obviously has to report an address, but the server can go, okay, that address, we insert these ads at these locations, these timestamps, and recompile on the fly in less than the time that it takes to download our finished podcast.
Well, more than likely what they do is, and I've not looked into the tech, but my imagination is that they have a central server. And basically, they get a report back of a location from the podcatcher, and they fish out whatever ad makes sense there. So it's the same link in every feed?
No, I don't think so.
It's actually way, way more sinister than that. If you're dealing with Spotify's one that they bought, it's way, way more sinister. What was the one they bought?
Can I cut you off real quick, Joe?
Yeah, go on.
All right, don't forget what you're going to say, because I'm going to say whatever Joe's about to say is correct, and here's why I know what he's about to say is correct. Here's why I know it's not just pre-compiled for the regions, is because I've used it while traveling, and you can get there are Venn diagram overlap areas on the physical map of the United States where those ads will change in the same episode. Not once it's been downloaded, but from the same server, from the same podcast, and it doesn't take but 100 miles or so to do it. I think it is based on, at least here in the States, the three-letter code for the nearest airport, because that's the way weather is done. It's not by zip code. It's not as granular as town, but it may be by weather region.
No, it's way more sinister than that, I'm afraid. It's based on you. It's based on, I mean, in theory, let's face it, this tech is relatively new, and it's part of the whole ad tech, spying, whatever you want to call it, tracking.
And we do each neatly fit into a slot in a database.
Well, yeah, but so the deal with it is what you're talking about is dynamically inserted ads, right? And so the technology of that's relatively straightforward. You've got quite a beefy server. Your podcast client requests a download. They make a decision on what ads are going to get stitched in. They get stitched in less than a second into the audio file, and then it gets downloaded to your or streamed to your device, and then you have the ads that they have decided. That's, I mean, we're all technical. We understand how you could do that if you had a beefy enough server, but how they make the decision, that's the sinister part. So it's much like how this decision is made when you're browsing without ad block enabled on web pages. They are targeted at you. You know, you Google searched for, I don't know, what did I search for recently? Bluetooth speakers, and then I just get bombarded with loads of different Bluetooth speaker ads everywhere I go. And so the theory is
a punchline. Sorry to break in.
Sorry, can I use my... I was listening to this. I think I was like, what are they talking about? Although I think I get this now. Or I might be totally wrong. But anyway, internet radio, okay? I listen to, say, a metal station from Germany or France or whatever, but... Oh, actually, Netherlands to begin with. And what I noticed suddenly is I was getting like a local advert. Like, and I was thinking, like, why am I getting a local advert for whatever in Bristol?
Exactly what you're talking about.
It's part of its location. Obviously,
Joe, I heard myself back. Quick punchline and then get back, please. It doesn't work because after you buy the Bluetooth speaker, you get those same ads for the next 3 months. So they really don't know shit. All they can do is watch. That's the upside to this. That's the bright side.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is I have a return period and I may see an advert for a Bluetooth speaker that's better than the one that I bought. And I may return this one to Amazon. Okay, they might send it to India to be burnt. And then I will buy a better one for a cheaper price potentially. But anyway, as I was saying, it's kind of based on...
Oh, mute. Assuming it finds the IP address on the internet radio station and goes, hey, you're actually in Britain, so in that case, here's the advert for you.
We hear you, Zav. We're just not letting you interrupt the conversation to say that we hear you.
Yes, Moss, we hear you.
Ah, well, now I hear me. I had the headphone plugged in at the wrong port.
That's what the repeater bot's for. Have you tried the repeater bot?
I have no idea.
Dude, it's the audio test room. If you go in there, you'll get a personalized repeater bot that you can sound check before popping into a room.
Well, I'm good.
Yes, you are.
I hope.
Anyway,
so
the too long didn't read is that it's somewhat based on location. They try and make it based on your own profile that they build around you, and they are constantly improving that profile on everyone. And it is sinister, and I don't like it. Well, it's sinister in the way that all ad tech and tracking is sinister because, you see, I firmly believe in advertising as a way to monetize anything on the internet because that's how it's always been done and how I believe it will always be done. I don't think that people want to pay for things. I think people want things for free. And so the bottom line is you need to have ads, but I don't believe that those ads need to be targeted at individuals. I think they need to be targeted to the content. So if you have a great blog post about Bluetooth speakers, then you should have a ton of ads next to it about Bluetooth speakers.
Yeah,
and if you have a podcast about Linux and open source, then you should have adverts that are relevant to the kind of person who would listen to that.
May I answer the same question, Seb? It's sinister.
I'm going to be listening, but AFK.
It's sinister in that it feeds you an echo chamber and they don't tell you that that's what they're doing. And people really like echo chambers, so they don't bother to check that that's what's being done.
Can I just interject here? This is my day job. Hi. I work for a company called Adjust. We are a mobile ad tech company. So I get to see all this stuff happening on the back end. I am absolutely on board with Joe. I don't agree with what we do either. Yeah, I'm totally against it. It's just a job that got me into a country that I wanted to live in. But
congratulations.
I will just say on this front, sinister is perhaps the wrong way to look at it, if only because the algorithms, quote unquote, that are making these decisions are entirely dumb, have no knowledge of what you are, who you are, don't want to know. So when we say personal data is being collected about you, the thing that's being collected, at least on the mobile, I mean, web is worse. Web is a lot worse. Don't get me wrong. The web cookie tracking, that stuff is really bad. But for mobile tech, basically your device has a GDPR compliant advertising ID on it. It is a string of numbers. It's a UUID, basically, a string of numbers and text. It could be reset at any time. And at that point, any data collected on you is worthless, frankly, because it no longer reports back anything associated with you. Yeah.
Go ahead, Seven, and I'm next.
I was talking about internet radio, which seems to be the same thing generally that we were talking about. But if I'm listening to internet radio and I pick the foreign country, I don't want to hear that stupid local advert. I really don't. And in fact, I'd rather hear their adverts like you would on the radio station. Like the Swedish one, I was getting the local adverts. But yeah, it's done by IP address advertising and things like that. And then, okay, we've got cookies and other things as well on the internet. And Google's spying us as well.
Well, yes, but so if you want to listen to a podcast that sprouts from Indonesia, who in Indonesia gives a shit if you hear their ad? So those aren't the ones you're going to pay for to hear it. The lumber store up the street from you, however, has discovered that people are listening to podcasts, and you'll hear an ad for the lumber store up the street from you, because they want you to hear their ad. And I've got to say, well done in the execution. I don't love the implementation or being subject to it, but well done in its implementation. Now I forgot my question, so continue.
Well, that's forcing you to hear some local advert when you don't want to. In fact, if I want local adverts, I'll turn the normal radio on here, BBC, whatever, you know.
But that's beside the point. BBC nobody ever wants ads. It's you either get ads or you pay for the content. That's neither here nor there. I'm just saying, if you have to have ads, it's better for the guy paying for the ad that he hits someone local. And frankly, it's probably better for me if the guy paying is someone local, because at least then I got a chance of keeping a small business in business.
Oh, I guess just use a VPN or whatever and pretend you're from whatever country, and then I guess it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, the research that has been done, and there is a lot of research around this, is that actually people find targeted ad much less annoying than general ads, because targeted ads actually have a chance of meaning something to them. And what Joe was suggesting, which was the targeted content ads, would probably fit this as well. But general ads that do not have anything to do with you, have no basis in your prior search history, or in the case of mobile ad tech, in your prior installs, are actually considered much more annoying by most users than ads that actually mean something to them. Well, this is why when Apple introduced iOS 14, they introduced this thing called the SK Ad Network, and with it, the sort of corollary privacy tools, quote unquote, which allows people to block the block access to what's called the ADID, which is that string of numbers I was talking about earlier.
Can I ask you a quick question, since this is your job, and I will forget this question if I don't ask now? Who's more valuable to you, the average user or people, I don't want to say like us, but frankly like us, who recognize that this is going on?
Everybody knows it's going on. The most valuable people are...
No, not everybody. Some people use Facebook and shit.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. So there are a few things. There are classifications, and if you've ever done any research into gaming apps, you know this. There are classifications of people that go all the way from basically non-payers to what they call whales. There are a very small number of users who are responsible for the vast majority of purchases. The average user does not purchase things based on advertisements. It just doesn't happen. That's not what advertisers know this. They're casting a very wide net. They know that there are basically going to be, in every, I don't know, 10,000 people they get, there's actually only going to be maybe 15 who actually buy, but they buy a lot. They're people with a lot of disposable income. But back to the point that was going on about with podcasts, the most valuable thing when it comes to advertising and targeted advertising is not you. It is not knowing about your previous actions. It's not knowing about your previous behavior. It is your location. Where are you currently? Because that is what links this up to different businesses that might have a chance at selling you something right now. So when you have apps that are asking for location access, one of the big reasons for this is it's super important that they know where you are right now so that they can start recommending things to you that's in the local area that you might go and buy. Because that's how companies like mine get asked to put ads in front of people who are nearby. That's the most important sort of thing in advertising.
Say again, why?
Because it's useless to tell. Well, because going back to your point, you said if somebody in Indonesia has an ad, why would they want me in the UK to hear that ad? They don't. It doesn't do anything for them. It doesn't help them in any way.
Unless they have an online service. Sorry, it's very windy here. Unless they have some sort of service that is online and can be purchased from anywhere. Say a cloud provider, sure. For example.
Sure.
Are these two things?
Or it's just internet radio and, I can really see his point, but I mean, if it's internet radio, there's a chance I got linked to Sweden. I'm going to look on I want to listen to a Swedish radio station. In fact, I might even go to Sweden and then I might think, hey, it wasn't it? Well, no, I probably wouldn't think, hey, there was an advert for whatever. As for local advertising, it's a bit like, well, you can see his point. You got more chance of selling something if it's local, but it's a bit annoying when you're listening to something that's otherwise in whatever Dutch, and you go, "Hang on, an advert for Bristol." You're like, "What the hell?"
Look, advertisers don't care about what's annoying. If they did, they wouldn't advertise.
Yeah, right.
They care about.
They care about ROI, return on investment.
Yeah, they care about ROI. And is there to your point, Seb, where it says that they, you know, maybe I'll go to Sweden one day. Doesn't matter. That's one day. That's not today. That's not right now. I want your money now. That's advertisers.
Is there a way for the internet seller to target locations just like local sellers do? And is there a way for them to determine which locations are better and worse for them? Are you into that yet?
Sure. I mean, there is good research to indicate when, you know, for example, going to Joe's point about cloud resellers and stuff like that, where is it most useful to hear about that? Well, in cities, London, New York, places like that, where people are working for businesses, where they're most likely to actually be working in an industry. So, for example, you're going to get bombarded with that kind of thing in Silicon Valley, but maybe less so in rural Yorkshire.
But there's no point. So those are services, yes?
Sure. Yeah, those are like cloud services, AWS, for example.
How about in the I'm not arguing with you. I'm sorry. This is really fascinating. It's just spurring questions out of me. What about material goods? If I want to sell, I just bought a new little CNC machine, and I think I'm doing good with it. And I want to be able to sell CNC goods to motorcyclists. Sorry, that was predictable, Taj.
No. I think, no, Popey, you can't advertise like this on the local, on that radio station, like podcast, whatever, because you're not a company, I think would be the answer to that, if you're just a person, if that helps. I don't know if that's what you kind of get.
I'm talking specifically, like, I don't know about radio advertising, that's beyond my purview, I just know about mobile advertising, and to the point
that is my question. Step it up from where you're thinking, Seb. Step it up. Say I want to turn this from a hobby into a business, or I want to turn this from a business into a slightly larger business. Can I still? I'm asking specifically to Sporif. Can I still find? And I sell on the internet. I'm not just a local guy. I want to step it up from. I do good locally. I want to step it up my internet sales. Can have you dabbled in? I want to ask specifically about your platform that you work for. I'm trying to frame it outside of that. But do you understand as a guy who can explain it to me how a person in that scenario would target a podcast listener physically on the globe?
So to kind of outline what my business does, we're in the sort of business of what's called what's it called? It's a mobile measurement partnership. So what we do, I'm a technical writer. I don't get into the actual programming and nitty-gritty. But basically what we do is we attribute things like app installs to the advertiser that succeeded in getting you to install it. So the stuff we're talking about specifically is apps. But theoretically, from what you're talking about, there are lots of different factors here. Advertisers do collect large bases of information about, yes, you and your behavior as an individual, but also, like I say, the generalized information about an area you live in. To take your example about motorcycle equipment, if you happen to be in an area such as you are, let's say you're in Wisconsin, okay? You're in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and
home of Harley Davidson.
It's the home of Harley Davidson. It's also, let's say, for example, it is currently the Harley Davidson Festival. There is a very good chance that because you're in that location at that time, even if you yourself do not have a history of doing anything with motorcycles, you are suddenly surrounded by a bunch of people who are involved with motorcycles and are very, you know, we are talking thousands here. So there's a big concentration there, and they're basically going to catch a cast all net. So say, geographically, I want to basically target this area for however long. Now, so you as a business, the way that this would work for you is you basically tell the advertiser. It's as topical as it is
geographic.
Yeah, there's loads of different factors. This stuff is really complicated. But the way it would work for you as a business owner now is you would go to an advertiser and say, I am going to give you basically this much money, and I want you to put my ads in front of people, and the return on investment I want from that is this much in sales. It's the advertiser's job to then use their body of knowledge to put that ad in front of as many people as possible. My software, for example, the software I work on, if this were an app, for example, you have an app and you want to advertise it, the software that I work on would basically determine who gets paid for the install. So when a user clicks an ad and gets taken to the app store to install that app, an advertiser needs to be paid. Now, you might have got three advertisers advertising the app in the same way. You need to know which one of them got that done. And so basically, advertisers are always vying to be the one who got the install or got the sale or whatever it was. So they will use their vast knowledge of human behavior, existing human behavior, existing user behavior, but also, yes, geography and you know, patterns of behavior in a certain area to target that ad where they're going to get the best ROI. So yeah, it's one of those things. It's very, I mean, it's sinister is a word for it. Again, sinister implies, I think, a motivated person behind this who's doing all of this. But in reality, it's a bunch of dumb systems that know nothing being strapped together. and it's actually, like I say, you peek into one of these systems, they don't know who you are. They don't care. They just know you're you, this UUID that's associated with your device, not with you.
So listen, sorry to interrupt, man, but I would love to talk to you about this properly when I'm not terribly drunk and on a shitty mobile connection in the wind. So if just like at me somewhere or send me an email or something, because I really want to talk to you in depth about this if you have time to an inclination to do so. But I really would love to talk to you more about this.
Bad news is outside of tonight, he's 120 pounds an hour.
It's true.
Well, no, you know, I mean, like I say, I do have those little dollars, you know.
I mean, like I say, I'm a technical writer, so my job is really very perfunctory. My job is basically to look at APIs and tell you how they work. But we did.
Yeah, your job is to explain technology. Your job is the same as mine, specific. But I talk and you write. It's very similar.
Yeah, it's just that I don't write about the sort of you know. I have a very limited purview of what I write about, but we did do about 3 weeks of onboarding where we got this all explained to us. And this industry is constantly evolving, and my company is one of the ones at the forefront of it. So, you know, they are.
Hence
very,
why I want to talk to you, man.
To be,
yeah, totally, yeah, that's why I want to talk to you.
To be totally fair, Sporif, I've asked you pretty much only marketing questions, and you're a technical writer, and there's not a lot of overlap there, but really you've done a hero's job of it.
Yeah, I mean, we work with marketers specifically, and they are the ones who come to us to ask us to implement new features to you know, handle these new upcoming features that they really want to get in with. But the best people to talk to about this stuff would be the actual advertising agencies. You know, it would be people the like, for example, scouts. Our parent company is one called, I think it's AppLovin or something. And they are one of the market leaders in the actual tech behind advertising. Like, they're really big on this stuff. And it is worth looking into these different ad agencies and seeing how they do what they do. Because they're usually pretty good at explaining, at least in a sort of obfuscated way, how they get your ads in front of people. And it's fascinating. So it really is a fascinating subject. Like I say, I personally, if I were given the choice of working in mobile ad tech, it wouldn't have been my choice. But where I work is a very good company in terms of being employed there. They're very nice. They're very they were willing to take me on as a writer when I had no previous experience with it. So can't complain.
Do you have to go to the office, or can you do it remote?
I'm fully remote. I do go into the office sometimes, but no, I live. I'm like 45 minutes away, so I don't bother most of the time.
Can I rotate the gem to see a different facet? I don't want to actually transition.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm talking like a podcaster. What kinds of advertising, because we haven't discussed, you know, direct payment of a podcast, what other kinds of advertising are all of us willing to put up with if it's not this directed advertising that comes at you based on where you're standing when you download the podcast? What else are you, like, just as an example, the live read, or that's the only example I can think of. I shouldn't have said or.
I'm one good example of this actually for me is there's a really good podcast called Maintainable, and Maintainable is produced by a company, and the only advertising they do is for themselves. So basically they use it as a vehicle to advertise themselves. And I mean, I will never use their services. They work as a specifically a Ruby on Rails consultancy firm, which is not a software product I use or something I would ever need, but I appreciate
slash
that
advertising firm for Ruby on Rails consultancy.
Well, sure. Yeah.
Another example of that is Thinking Elixir, which is a very, very specific podcast about Elixir, the programming language, which is, I can't remember what it's derived from. I'm sure someone will tell me right now. And that's sponsored by some big company in the Elixir world anyway. And that's their whole thing is to just advertise themselves, and they pay an editor and all the rest of it to produce a professional sounding podcast. That's one route to go down. And, you know, it's something I've explored as well. And people, you know, I've had meetings with people and got close and done pilots and whatnot. And well, for a while, kind of did that for a living for 18 months in a way.
So can I ask, other than Joe and Spore, if the other people in the room who are listening, would you listen to a podcast like that, that just puts on basically, I mean, it sounds like propaganda to me. It sounds like self-hosted, self-circling propaganda. Anybody else in the room, what do you think?
Well, I know that we have upwards of 1,000 people listening to Distro Hopper's Digest, so I really don't see how we couldn't have a niche podcast for the people that wanted to listen to a niche podcast.
Yeah, but I'm not asking about niche podcasts. I'm asking, like, your bread and butter stuff, or even if it is your niche podcast. The guy making it says, hey, I can't afford to do this anymore if I don't start getting some money coming in. What are you willing to put up with? What would you prefer to have presented to you as his or her monetization plan?
My first preference is donations. If we do go to ads, we want it to be ads that we support, that we use, not something that just happens to be on the topic.
But good as luck, everyone knows, that, my I'm really, friend.
Yeah, I'm really on the fringe of this. I've taken heat for promoting my podcast as being ad free.
Indeed, we've clashed about it, and I've blocked you pretty much everywhere I can think of because of it. Because you have publicly said, you've probably talked about advertising as being like a really negative thing. And, you know, you're entitled to your opinion. And I'm entitled to my opinion to block you from my
I am not referring to advertising as a negative thing. I'm referring to most of my listeners seeing it as a negative thing and me not needing advertising money. So it's a promotional thing. If you want to reach people that don't want to hear advertising in a podcast, you have to promote that you don't have advertising in your podcast.
I guess so. But, you know, if you just want to do something as a hobby, then good luck. But, you know, I do this for a living, man. So
well, I'm not putting you down for what you do, and I don't think you should be putting me down for what I do.
Yeah, Joe, Taj and I, and Lyle, who's not here at the moment, we do a podcast together. We don't take ads. We never want to take ads. If it gets to the point where that if we need to take advertisements or to collect money, we kind of decided as a group that we don't want to continue the podcast at that point. So, I mean, thank God for free software. Podcasting is monetarily cheap enough that we've been able to continue doing this. And by we being able to continue doing this, I mean that Taj and Lyle do it and allow me to tag along. Hi, Taj. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, totally. Like, if you just want to do it as a hobby, then, yeah, thanks to free and open source software and various other services, you can do it pretty much completely for free at this point and not even need any donations. Maybe like a domain if you want to splash out $10 a year or whatever, $20 for one of those fancy domains. And otherwise, yeah, it can be completely free. But that's just not what I went into this thinking. I went into this thinking that I want to make podcasts about Linux and open source, not shit like they were when I came into this nearly 10 years ago. And I want to try and raise the quality. And I want to make people actually do good shows. And the only way I can do that is by doing that myself. And so I spent a long time getting good at making shows about Linux. And the only way I can do that is by getting paid to do it, because I'm not just going to do it totally for free. And so I made it my job, and now it is my job. And when some people come along and say, well, when people come into my social channels, like my Telegram group, and start advertising their podcast as being, we've got no adverts, so we're better, or we're great because we've got no adverts, like...
See, you're reading that into what I'm saying. I'm not ever saying we're better because we have no adverts. I'm just saying we have no adverts. You have an attitude about this that I don't have, and I don't understand why you're upset with me for promoting my product the way it is.
This debate sounds way older than the however many of us sitting down tonight.
It is way older, and I very nearly left when I realized he was here. And then he started talking about it in the chat and riled me up a little bit. And I'm really trying not to get angry and leave, but I think I might have to because I just
please don't agree on this. Well, you don't have to leave because you don't disagree with somebody. That's what's wrong with the world today. Just learn to communicate with
Communicate with people like it is literally my job. It's not about communicating with people. Sometimes you just have to accept that some people can't be communicated with, man, and you have to just block them. And, you know, once you get to a certain...
I'm saying there's like at least 10, 12 other people in the room right now, and you're saying interesting things that we're interested in. And so is Zaval, yeah, saying interesting things. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just asking you for my own benefaction. Just stick around and just we're having a conversation. Now, because I've got questions for you. You've said stuff that's prompted questions in my head, having nothing to do with Zalvia. Can we put it
Zavala
for a moment? What is
Zavala? I have Zavala, no problem with Joe. Joe has a problem with me. I don't understand it. I'm trying to understand
aside,
it.
Can you put aside for the moment that he has a problem with you?
I can just be quiet altogether. Yeah.
If he shuts up and just stops talking, then we can put it aside, no problem, and I'll keep talking to the rest of you, no problem, yeah. But if he's going to keep butting in, then I'm going to leave. It's as simple as that. I have no time for the fellow. Sorry to bring drama. It is an open room, but you're open to join and you're open to leave. And if you keep talking, I'm going to leave. It's as simple as that.
You're also open to chase somebody out of the room if you want to be obnoxious. I did that to somebody one time, and I still haven't forgiven myself, and he probably hasn't forgiven me for it.
I don't want to be obnoxious.
Can I?
Heard as being obnoxious when I'm not.
Only by him. Only just chill out when he's talking about something and leave that for another day. That's all I'm asking.
Okay, I can leave it.
Sorry, I was away while listening to it a bit, and I see there's a heated argument or some sort here, but can I be the...
Well, I don't know the peace speaker, but I want to ask a question to Joe, actually, going with what he was saying just now about podcasting and how he decided that he was going to do something a bit different. 10 years ago, they weren't particularly good or whatever. So it sounds like Joe is making some money doing podcasting.
Fine. It's what I do for a living, yes.
Yeah. And I think I talked to you briefly before, and you're one of the podcast people. I don't think back. Well, it might be in an old camp with you. I'm not sure you are. But anyway, that's not the point. My question I wanted to generally bring up on here anyway, on HPR at some stage, and this might actually be a good time, if I can word this right. Basically, is open source a pastime, a hobby, or is it a job? And what I mean is, like, because I know that a lot of open source stuff is voluntary, it's hobbyist, it's done for fun, but then some things are done as a pastime, and then the question can be, are you professional or not? So in your case, are you a professional podcaster, would you say now? If you see my question, what I'm trying to ask, I don't know if it makes sense.
I think I understand.
Because you're getting paid, as well. It's not just a hobby, is it?
Yes. Right, okay, so to be clear, my only source of income is making podcasts,
yeah.
And they are almost all about Linux.
Hold on. Seb, you really can't key up when anybody else is keyed up. It instantly causes...
Oh, yeah, I've got the thingy, haven't I, feedback.
Yeah, it makes Joe and anybody else unintelligible. Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No, the alcohol makes me unintelligible.
No, it makes you looser in the lips. I love it. It's wiggling my hips.
It makes me almost say a word that gets me fired from certain jobs. So I need to... anyway, so, right. Yes, what I do, to be clear to everyone who doesn't know who I am, what I do for a living is make podcasts about Linux. So I basically... The joke is I talk to my friends about Linux for a living. So basically what everyone has been doing here tonight and for the last, like, 50-something hours, I think, or however long this has been going in. Anyway, that's the joke, is that's what I do for a living. But in reality, what I do is I craft those that are entertaining and amusing and informative and thought-provoking and not too long, not too short and whatever. And I also have to sell a bunch of ads, and I have to deal with the finances of that, and I have to be a terrible sysadmin in a sense as well. That's what I do for a living, is make shows about Linux. And the question about this idea of open source being a hobbyist endeavor versus a professional endeavor, there are two types of people who contribute to open source. There are people who do it in their spare time, and there are people who do it for a living. And that Venn diagram is not two separate circles. There are often people who contribute to open source projects for a company like Red Hat, let's say, or Canonical, or SUSE, whoever owns them this week. Yep.
I've been around a while. It's not even circles, dude. They overlap in weird non-Euclidean ways.
I was simplifying, obviously. But anyway, what I'm saying is this, that to be an open source person does not necessarily mean that you are paid all the time or a volunteer all the time. There's overlap, but there is a myth that open source software is all volunteers, and the reality of that is so far from that. Most people who work on open source software get paid to do so, and you know, you could argue that, well, most open source software only has one person who develops it and maintains it on some GitHub or GitLab or whatever repository, but I'm talking about the open source software that millions of people actually use.
But you're right, and either way. Even if it is just that one person still has to sustain themselves day to day, week to week, year to year.
Yeah, and so the best way to do that is to get a company to pay, well, to get your thing popular enough that a company will pay you to work on it, because they're depending on it and they realize that it's not a good idea to depend on something that someone's doing in their evenings and weekends. But that's like a whole other debate. But
the debate being that that's the best way of doing it, or that's the only way, or because best I can see that as being like a incendiary word in the rest of a completely agreeable sentence.
It's a complicated issue. The funding of open source is not something we can tackle in 50 hours, 500 hours of discussion on Mumble. We
not
couldn't
even
solve
with this
the problem.
Much alcohol.
No. We could have 100 New Year HPR things and still not come up with a solution to the problem of funding or software. But all I'm saying is this. My business model is pretty straightforward, right? I make great shows that a bunch of people listen to, and then I sell as many ads as I can that are based on the content and offer people the opportunity to listen to those shows without any adverts if they're willing to pay a certain number of dollars per month. It's a relatively straightforward business model. It doesn't involve any tracking as such. It just involves the tracking of how many people are downloading, how many thousand people listen to that episode. That's all I'm really interested in. And to some extent, like, what country are you in? But like, that's as granular as it gets. And, you know, what's the demographics? Well, I don't need tracking software to tell me that it's 20 to 50-year-old white men who listen to my shows. I just have to go to any event that I organize, and that fucking tells me who's listening to my shows.
So, okay, in that case, my question is, you would say you are, well, two questions here. One is, you would say you are a professional podcaster. Yes, that's what you do. So that makes you, you're not just a hobbyist. That's the first question, yes.
Well, I make a living out of it. Whether that makes me professional or not is a matter of humor. But yes, I am a professional podcaster right now at this time on the 1st of January, 2023. That is currently my profession, is making podcasts. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's I take that as an answer. And also the whole thing, that's the debate. And that's I kind of want to talk about that in this public speaking and speech I'm thinking of doing in March, a public speaking group for 7 minutes. But some people, you know, the STEAM people, science, tech, engineering, mathematics, open source, they just basically have so much of their free time as a hobbyist. That's their big number. That's what they do in their spare time. They're not even getting paid for it. And what people overlook is that people think, hey, you're not doing anything that good in life unless you're getting paid. But that's like, hang on a minute. There's loads of open source contributions that are absolutely amazing that people do, from programming to testing to translation to documentation to quality assurance. And they're not getting paid, but they're doing some really amazing things, some great reports, great projects under the community now, as an example. Not just that, but and I think that's the point I want to try and make somewhere, that people can do some really amazing things. And open source is one way to do it, because it allows you to do whatever you want, pretty much, and you don't have to be paid. But saying that, there are people getting paid as well doing things. So it's a bit of both.
I'd just like to put in here, because I'm an open source maintainer in my spare time. The software is the smallest part of many open source projects, and actually, the writing of the software often is what you spend the least amount of time doing. And you say, you know, you can do what you want with it. It's not really true. The moment you start getting users, they start to dictate how, and not dictate in like a, you know, dictatorship sort of way, but they start to influence very heavily how you build the software going forward. And that can lead to you having to put a lot of time into things you never really wanted to, that you have no interest in. You have to put a lot of time into research and understanding and, you know, conversation. So in that way, it's kind of similar to what Joe was saying, where it's like a podcast is not just, you know, recording yourself talking. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And that's actually where the money tends to go. so we get, you know, we've been very lucky in the past to have had some funding, and the vast majority of it seems to go on just keeping the project managed. Very little of it actually goes on the code that gets written. It's the stuff around the code. It's the talking to people. It's the research. It's the planning. It's the continued sort of conversations with people. That's where it gets really expensive and challenging, I think, in open source.
Yeah, I mean, I think marketing depends on the project, obviously, again. But I do think marketing is an area that a lot of projects will have struggle with, or it'll be harder to do. But marketing is kind of is important, or you're not going to get the users, and then who's going to be using this stuff anyway?
Yeah, marketing is an interesting conundrum for open source projects, and particularly, I mean, we've had a particular problem recently. Of course, this whole Twitter debacle went on. People came over from Twitter to Mastodon. Now, Mastodon occupies a similar space to us. We're both Fediverse projects, and so we were really sort of excited that people would come over to Funkwell, check it out. But of course, because the software was kind of in a state at the moment of in-betweenness, their first impression of it was, I don't understand, it's confusing, it's ugly, and all this stuff. And so we actually ended up getting bad press from people coming over in light of what happened at Twitter. And that's a really challenging to deal with, because, you know, we can't show them the results of all the work that we've done until it's finished. And that, I think, is actually a fate a lot of open source projects sort of hit, is that they get attention at the wrong time, and that can be just as bad as not getting attention at all.
Maybe, I don't know if Mastodon was ready to take on loads of people like the servers, but suddenly there's a massive influx as well. Everyone's going, at least in the tech people, were going, Mastodon.
Well, yeah, and look at what's happening with Matrix. I don't know if you read their blog post about the, financial dire straits that they're in right now, because, you know, they didn't, well, I don't know. I'm not going to pass judgment on it, but they are a victim of their own success, let's say, and also of issue where companies will use stuff and not pay for it, not contribute to it in any way, because it's free and open source, so therefore it's free as in beer.
Yeah, and I think Matrix also suffered from this problem of a lot of places use Matrix and use specifically Element as it is. Others, such as the German government, have made their own clients and things like that. But what they haven't done then is made things that are useful to the project as a whole. So while, of course, they are upstreaming, they're not upstreaming anything of use, because it's all just very specific stuff that only the German government would want. And that's part of the problem as well, because that creates, it sounds helpful. The German government's picking it up. They're going to contribute code. And of course they contribute, but they contribute some useless stuff sometimes. And that actually creates a lot more administrative overhead for the upstream developers to sift through all of that and make sure they're not including stuff that wouldn't be useful elsewhere. So if the German government aren't paying Matrix, that's appalling, frankly. It wouldn't surprise me.
I've heard of Matrix, but I don't know enough about it. But what I was going to say is, it could be like, hey, Pixar using Linux to make movies, great. Although then it turns out they've got their own commercial program, I think. That's another point. And what I was going to say as well is, obviously, with the software licenses, if a company goes and goes, hey, look, it's GPL code, we'll just put that in on TV software or something, and that's found that about, then, well, so there's things like the Software Freedom Controversy and the FSF, obviously, and the FSFE as well, and in the UK there's, Open UK, that one of those organisations, you know, they'll go to court over it, potentially. Like, you've broken the GPL, no, you need to release your code, you need to do stuff, you know what I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a real shame, because on a sort of personal ethics level, I really like the idea of much more permissive licenses, such as the MIT license and the two-clause BSD license. Like, those, to me, are much cleaner licenses than the GPL. But unfortunately, because of the problem that Joe's highlighted, if you use those licenses, you run the risk of people taking your work and just not contributing back. Sometimes you get lucky. In the example I would give there is Netflix heavily uses FreeBSD for their caching, and they are massive contributors back to the FreeBSD project, which is wonderful. And in their case, it makes financial sense, because, you know, they upstream it and it's up to the FreeBSD maintainers to maintain it from there. But it's a positive, net positive. They do a lot of improvements. But the vast majority of things, if you do make them with a permissive license, companies will take advantage of that. And that's why viral licensing such as GPL exists, you know. And it's a real question you have to ask yourself when you're starting a software project is, do I want to make this under the license that I think is, you know, my personal favorite, which in my case is MIT, or do I need to protect myself from, you know, future thievery? And, you know, these kinds of decisions are difficult and they have long lasting ramifications for how your software goes. So there's no easy answer to any of this. I actually had a question, though, for Joe. When you said you sell ads, I don't listen to many podcasts. So I've not come across it. But is the format of that you read ads as part of the show?
Yes. So it's baked in host read mid-rolls in your jargon. Yeah. So like I sell ideally a bunch of ads, but sometimes just single ones to companies. And then, we agree a 60-second script. And then I do my advert. Okay, this episode is sponsored by this company. Go to this company's URL.com/blah, blah, blah. They're great and you should check them out and blah, blah, blah. So that's thiscompany.com/LNL or whatever. So yeah, that's how I do it. Yeah. I do direct sales. I have things in the works with agencies, but I found that to be an immensely frustrating experience hitherto. But we'll see. That's kind of why I want to talk to you about this properly, like privately and when I'm sober.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much help I'll be, but I'm happy to tell you what I know. But I was just going to ask then and I'm guessing that the way that this is worked out and the way that it's, you know, that the sort of payment that comes out of this is worked out is based on the number of people who head to the link you specify, that's how the payouts happen.
Well, I don't want to go too far into my corporate secrets, as it were, but no, it's based on the number of people who regularly download, and what you get there is a CPM, cost per milli or cost per thousand. And so, say you have, I don't know, what's a simple thing, 10,000 people listening. So your multiplier is 10. So say you're going to charge them $1 million per thousand people who listen. It is orders of magnitude less than that, obviously. But let's say it's $5 per thousand people who listen and you have 10,000 people listening on average. So therefore you charge them 5 times 10 is $50 per advert. Obviously, those figures are not the real ones. But so that's the sort of traditional baked-in way. My understanding of dynamically inserted ads is that it's more a case of you agree a CPM. And so say it's $5 per thousand people. And they say, right, well, our budget is... $5,000, and so therefore we will pay for 1,000 impressions. So it's more like the old school banner ads and text ads. So it's they will dynamically insert into the first 1,000 downloads their ad, and that can either be programmatic, as they call it, which is read by just some voice actor person in a studio somewhere, or it can be host read, and you get more money for the host read ones. Say in their platform, you know, you upload your MP3 and you say, right, at 10 minutes and 45 seconds, here's the ad break. And so they then dynamically insert 1,000 of those that people have paid, you know, the first 1,000 people that download that episode, they dynamically insert the advert for this mattress company or whatever, and then once 1,000 are done, that's it, and you get paid. So it's a sort of quite a different way of doing it to how I have traditionally done it, which is we have X number of people downloading, you know, X number of thousands of people, and so that multiplier we will multiply by the CPM number, which we will agree, which obviously depends on the company you're dealing with and your negotiation skills, etc. And you know, I've heard of CPMs as low as $5 or as much as $150, and somewhere in between lies most of the deals that I have done, let's just say.
Okay, no, that's interesting. I ask mostly because the project I work on, we have rudimentary podcasting tools, and you know, as I mentioned, Castapod, they are a direct, I wouldn't say they're a competitor to us, we're not competing really, but they have done a lot of work around monetization, and we're rather more hesitant to get into the monetization side of things, specifically around advertising. We really don't want to have, like you say, dynamic advertising be something that we offer. However, something like host red advertising. I'm trying to just, I didn't really understand how it worked before this, but it would explain why people find things such as the viewership numbers or the listenership numbers so important. And it's just something for me to bear in mind when we come to revisit podcasting as a feature set, that having better analytics is a super important way of getting people, you know, giving people more avenues for payment than just, you know, what the one that we prefer, which is, you know, direct endorsement or direct donation. Because,
let me just say this, right? That unless you have like a million plus downloads a year, let's just say hundreds of thousands, millions of downloads per year, advertisers not interested these days, generally speaking, is my understanding of the market right now.
Let me also say this,
that even in a situation where you've got an audience that fully understands that you know, the donation model or pay what you can, as Elementary do, you know, they phrase that as pay what you can rather than pay what you want. But anyway, basically the donation model, you are never going to crack more than a few percent of people who are willing to pay for shit on the internet, is my understanding. And look, find me someone who has cracked more than a few percent and I want to go for beers with them and pick their brains on how the fuck they did that.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And it's something that, you know, we've struggled with it. We've been looking into it, and we are a mostly donation funded project. But there's a big difference between a project and a, you know, an individually created, you know, podcast, I think. But that's why we like this idea of having, let's say that if you give a value proposition to users for using this platform I talked about, Retribute, and you say, okay, let's say you gave €5 a month to, you know, and you just had that allocated and it's spread between your most listened podcasts randomly, whichever ones you most listen to or whatever ones you've most interacted with or whatever it may be, or random, who knows? I wonder if that's, and you know, spread that across multiple users who might be willing to do it. I wonder if that would start to sort of yield results. Because at the moment, we're seeing the problem that I mentioned about whales, where you have a lot, most people will not pay anything, and a few will pay thousands, you know? And.
Well, let me stop you, right? Because what you're talking about exists, right? What you're talking about exists, and it is called Podcasting 2.0. And there are a whole bunch of new podcasts. Yes. I think it's like newpodcastingapps.com. Yeah, those people do that, and certain other Linux busters.
And it works. So you're correct. I'm glad you found a piece of it that works for you, too. That's effing awesome. Self-censoring here, sorry.
Are we allowed to say fuck here?
Well, we are, but then Apple says you can't put like a kid smiley face on it, which I never thought should have been on it in the first place.
So fuck Apple, then.
Just imagine, but on the other hand, you know, you might, something I say might be so effing brilliant, you want to play it for your kids. So I watch out for that on my part.
Fair enough. But anyway, the dream of Podcasting 2.0 is genius. It's exactly what you were just talking about. It's the idea that everybody contributes a tiny bit. You know, they decide, right, my budget for the month or for the year is $5, $10, $100, $1,000, whatever.
Hold on. That's a very small part of Podcasting 2.0. The financial part of it is what everyone focuses on. So it looks huge because it's under a lot of magnifying glasses. It's just a wedge of the pie, though.
That's literally what we've been talking about for the last hour, is monetizing things generally. So yes, of course.
Yes, but you said Podcasting 2.0. So I would hate for anyone who hasn't heard of Podcasting 2.0 to think that everything we've talked about for the last hour encapsulates Podcasting 2.0. Podcasting 2.0.
All right. Well, let me cut to the chase then. All right. Let me cut to the chase then. And the cut into the chase is Podcasting 2.0 is tainted by crypto bullshit. And so therefore, I want nothing to do with it because crypto is Ponzi scheme, bullshit.
Correct.
I mean, if you want to agree, if you want to disagree with me, I mean, we can.
Yes, I would like
disagree
to
disagree on
I,
this.
Can I have 10 seconds to disagree?
I mean, you can, but I'll probably take my headphones off.
No, I want to discuss it with you. I would like to rebut a piece of what you just said, not the entire thing, in a reasonable way. And if you think I'm being unreasonable, I would appreciate that feedback as well.
Right. Well, let me just say this. Crypto, bullshit or not bullshit?
Are you saying that? Or are you asking that?
That's the question. It's like a Y/N. Crypto is bullshit. Y/N_.
That wasn't my question. Do I have to answer your question before you'll answer mine?
No. Feel free to answer to ask me any question you like, sir.
Okay, and I will answer yours next if you still are interested in what I care. You can cut that part out of podcasting 2.0. You don't have to use that at all.
Right. That was a statement.
Are you aware that you can cut that out of podcasting 2.0 and it's still a marvelous landscape without that included? That was my question.
Right. So my answer to that question is, of course, I'm aware that the monetization aspect of podcasting 2.0 is but one of the aspects of it, and chatters, new tags, and loads of other cool stuff, right? I'm totally aware of that.
So you think the rest of it's
now,
cool?
Let me,
can I steal that nugget from you?
No, you can't. You don't put words in my mouth, right? It's not cool because
the rest of it was cool.
No, I said that there are aspects of it which are
okay.
Cool.
Not the rest of it. I'm sorry. Correct. I should not have put those words in your mouth. Thank you.
Right. Just imagine this, right? Just imagine the most delicious food that you can imagine. Maybe that's a chocolate cake. Maybe that's a delicious English breakfast fry-up. Maybe it's the most delicious Chinese
food. I haven't found the
right sauce, though. Right, but just imagine you've cooked, just whoever's listening right now, just imagine you've cooked the perfect meal, or someone else has cooked it for you, and maybe they're friends of yours, maybe you've paid, whatever. You are sitting down to the most delicious meal in the world, right? It's better than anything else you've eaten, right? However, on the same table, there is a big plate of steaming shit, and that is crypto, and that has tainted the entire meal, and crypto has tainted the entire podcasting 2.0, and so that's it. Even if you take that plate of steaming shit out of the room, it still stinks, and you are not hungry anymore for this once delicious food.
Joe, may I say, out of love, I'm saying this to you. If the table's big enough and full enough, it doesn't matter what somebody far enough away is doing. It's you know what I mean? It hurts to shut people out.
I have no pain in shutting crypto bros out because that shit is fucking bullshit, scam, pyramid scheme, Ponzi scheme shit that has no room in anything that I'm willing to touch. It's fucking bullshit, and it can get fucked.
Yes, I agree. It's the third time you said it. Would you like to hear my answer since you asked me? I agreed I would answer.
All right, let's hear it.
If you still care, if you actually care, if you're just challenging me, don't. But if you care what I think about crypto, then I will answer.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. What are you hodling, my friend? What are you hodling?
What am I hodling? Hurdling? I missed that word.
Hodling. It's crypto speak for holding. What are you? How much crypto do you have?
Oh, zero. I don't care about crypto in the least.
That's funny therefore less than I have, because I've got 0.00 something of a Bitcoin and like 700 Dogecoin.
No, I can give you a little negative. I try to avoid it. Okay. There is a little bit of negative crypto. I lied. That's not true. My IRC bros were telling me buy Bitcoin. This thing is so cool. It's 11 cents and it's going to be worth something someday. Even if it's worth $1, you're a friggin' 100,000-aire, but buy it. And I didn't buy any. And that's my one regret regarding cryptocurrencies. The rest, I don't give a shit. That's my honest answer. And I respectfully am giving you that answer because I said I would if you answered my question, and you did. And thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. I still have another question for you in the chat, but it's a entire subject change.
Well, that's one of the reasons I stopped listening to the Jupiter shows, because they seem to be so tied into the crypto aspects that it just really turns me off. It's like their show doesn't exist without crypto, and I used to love listening to those guys.
Yeah, I think I'm personally in agreement with Joe here. Like, we as a project, have fought so hard against crypto, and we have put out public statements basically saying any suggestion of crypto, you have to fork the project to do that. We're not integrated with that. But I need to go and do some reading up on podcasting 2.0, because I really don't understand the sort of spec of it. And I wonder how many of the features you could lift from podcast 2.0, because you can't lift all of them, because it looks like some of this is about sort of creating a registry. But you could certainly lift some of the technical aspects, such as the chapter marking and stuff like that.
You don't need to lift it. You don't need to lift it. That shit exists already outside of podcasting 2.0. The whole thing is just intimately tied in with crypto bullshit, and it can just get fucked.
Yeah.
Hold on, Joe. That's super interesting. Before he's read it, Sopriff, when you're done reading this, you said you're going to check up on it. Will you please come on our podcast on U-Random and help us with it? Taj has read into it and he loved it, except for the money part, and he couldn't stand listening to it. Oh, Taj is here. Taj, I don't mean to speak for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, you know, from the perspective of we need to go back into look at podcasting again. I want to go in and understand, because we have, like I say, rudimentary podcast support. We don't have things like chapter markers and that kind of thing.
But chapter markers awesome. Album art is awesome. Yeah. Chapter art is unfriggin' believable. Your perspective is different than Taj's, but that's why it's interesting to me, and that's why I'd love if you'd come on our podcast. And now I will shut up and let you say whatever you wish.
I was just going to say, like, for me, I would agree, the biggest contention, and we read through Castapod's list of features, and, you know, we've suggested Castapod to people who want some of those more, you know, advanced features, but we're really put off by the crypto stuff. And that's why we don't really recommend it too much anymore. It's still a step in the right direction in some ways. If you're moving away from like Spotify as your other option for publishing, and you say, actually, I'll go with Castapod, in my opinion, that's a good move. But I'm in agreement with a thing about cryptocurrency. But that value for value thing that I'm looking at, that's something that you could do, like I say, with a traditional payment system backing thing, where you
no one's interested. No one's interested. That's the problem. You could do it, but no one wants to pay for shit that's free on the internet.
Absolutely.
Except
not.
For shit that's free people who get.
You're wrong. You're wrong. You're
okay. No,
wrong. We do
not
exist.
Statistically,
He's not looking for a statistic majority. He's looking for enough to get by, and maybe not even him. Somebody. They're looking for a server cost because they can't afford a server. And maybe I'm the only guy that pays and it supports it, or maybe I just throw into the bucket so that the guy who's giving it to me doesn't have to give me ads or whatever other reason. It's not where this was going.
Right.
Point is, we do exist.
No. Right. Yes. If by pay for the thing you mean literally pay for the infrastructure costs of, you know, a $5 VPS and maybe a $20 Libsyn account or whatever it is.
At my day job, I build the internet. Yes, I do that too. On my personal time, and this is what he's talking about. Can you let him finish?
Well, no, because what I'm getting at here is, right?
No, you can't let him finish.
No, because the problem is that we have not established what paying for something means, right? You can pay for the practical infrastructure aspects
here tonight
things.
In the time that we have with the words allotted to us with the amount of people we have. That's way too big a topic. Come on.
I think that I get what's being said here. Basically, what I'm talking about is essentially donations in kind. Essentially, you know, put money into a pot and have that be distributed. But that doesn't give you a certain thing. You're not actually purchasing something. Whereas if you subscribe to a podcast on, say, Substack or, Patreon, you do get something. You get an advert-free thing, or maybe you get some premium episodes that you don't get elsewhere. So I do get that, and that's certainly something that, you know, I don't think we have a solution to. Our solution is more about for those people who are sort of, you know, the sort of people who help pay for a Mastodon server that they use. Those generous people who might be willing to, you know, basically distribute some money between the content that they listen to, that be that music or podcasts. But I agree, that wouldn't be enough to make a living off of. And that's why I was asking you actually, Joe, about the how do your ad reads work? Because, you know, we need to think about other ways that we can help with that kind of thing.
We're
very much for ad reads, because I wasn't sure how the sort of payouts for ad reads work, how the how the actual setup for that works. But
no, I got it. Yeah, you clicked a little and I missed what you said. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry. We're a platform for hobbyists at the end of the day when it comes to podcasts. We're much more about music, and there's a different challenge to selling music than there is to making money off a podcast, because again, music, you get a deliverable. Whereas with and we have to think about that, because we don't really want to put paywalls in front of music either. But you know, that there's
hang on. Are you trying to interject the point?
Just awful.
No, wait. One interject the point real quick. With music, it is so deliverable. I have anticipation on my way to the internet to go buy music. It's really deliverable.
Hang on. So you're telling me that music is deliverable, right? So let's say AC/DC brings out a new album, right?
Joe,
and you look forward to that.
It's deliverable in a way that podcasting hasn't figured out yet. Podcasting is absolutely that deliverable. We just haven't figured it out yet.
No. I think the difference is, and it's historical. I think the difference is largely historical. Like you say, you have anticipation of buying the new album from AC/DC, and that's great. Whereas podcasts have historically always been essentially free access through easily accessible software using a standard RSS feed. And so people being, you know, they're like, I can get podcasts for free. And then suddenly the idea that they might have to pay for them, they find that difficult. Whereas music, they've always paid for it. That's baked in.
That's called growing up.
Well, let me get a little bit political here, right? Podcasts are free at the point of service. That doesn't mean they're free, because someone's got to pay for it. And
this sounds
something
like the NHS.
It sounds a lot like the NHS, doesn't it?
Joe, you're preaching to the choir. We all understand. You don't need to say it as if we disagree with you. We get that. We're on the same. Right. We're all on the same page at this point, and it sounds aggressive to me. Maybe I'm just hearing it wrong, and if so, I apologize for interrupting.
Well, it seems to me that you've got a bunch of people who are happy to make podcasts as a hobby, right? Which is totally cool, like great, and you know they want to make a few bucks out of it to sort of kind of cover their expenses and maybe even cover their time. But you know, if you're spending, you know, say 2 hours every couple of weeks to get together with some friends, record it, and you know, like maybe do a little bit in Audacity and then export it, upload it somewhere and publish it, and you know, that's you know you may be making a couple of hundred bucks a month, or you know, you're bringing in a couple of hundred bucks a month. That's covering your hosting costs, and it's you're paying everyone a beer money or whatever. That's cool, right? But that's just not what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to do this as a living, and it's just a different situation. And It's very hard in the Linux and open source world to make people understand that you can't, and this applies to open source projects as well.
Hey, Joe.
You've got certain projects that haven't been updated for years and years and years, right? Because
Joe,
okay,
you sound really guilty, but what you're saying doesn't sound worthy of guilt.
There's no guilt.
It's perfectly reasonable. I mean, you pay for the things that you want to keep.
Yes.
Especially in open source.
Yes, I wasn't trying to say
he's unreasonable.
I'm trying to say that, like, you sound... guilt. Yes, I don't think there's anything to be guilty
defensive.
About.
Maybe okay. Defensive is the word you're
looking for. Yeah, okay, now defensive I can think... understand, but then the difference there is that I would... You're among... I mean, I know you don't get along with... Is that...
Moss.
I have to go back to the pronunciation. Moss. I know you don't get along with them.
It's pronounced Moss. M-O-S-S.
Okay, yeah. Moss. Okay, I understand you don't get along with him. He still sounds like your friend.
You guys have a difference of opinion, that's about it.
I don't have a problem with your model, Joe. I know you need to make money. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't think that because I advertise one of my podcasts as being no ads, no BS, it doesn't mean I'm calling your product bad. It just means I'm calling my product what it is.
Okay, so no ads is in one circle and no BS is in another. And Joe, you don't fall within the Zen overlap. He never meant to intend that you did.
If anybody listening to this thinks that no ads and no BS is not an attack on people who have ads in their shows, then good luck. Good luck with critical thinking and the rest of it. To come to my house, my fucking house, my Telegram group, and advertise your podcast as having no ads and no BS gets you banned from my Telegram group.
So he said it in the wrong place.
No. Right. He said it in the wrong place, and then we had a private conversation about it, and then he doubled down on it, and he can get fucked, quite frankly. And all of you can get fucked because I'm just done with this.
Hey, don't tell me to get fucked. I'm trying to understand you, and I... All right.
Moss.
Yep. That's your res for the night.
Dude, you said it in the wrong place, and you shouldn't have doubled down. I did the same thing myself.
He was asking people to advertise their podcasts on his show. My podcast, I was not saying anything about his podcast being bad or wrong in any way. I was just saying my podcast has no ads, no BS. It's a less than 10-minute podcast of the week's Linux and open source news. But I don't have time to give long explanations.
I can understand how he took that personally.
Okay, right, sorry. Three. I was very angry and also happened to be in a dead zone there. Sorry. Fucking 3G sucks. It's not even 4G here. So I may be breaking up. Sorry.
Thank
I didn't leave there. That was shitty timing. Sorry about that.
That was harsh timing. It seemed kind of perfect.
Thanks, dude. Hey, okay. May I, for just a moment? I'm wicked drunk. I need to say I love you guys. I love this conversation. I understand. What is it? Moot, spell it.
Moss.
Moss, M-O-S-S?
Yes.
Okay, Moss. You made a great point. You did it in the wrong place. He let you know it was not in the wrong place. And instead of saying sorry, you know, next time I'll try to do it better, you double down. I've done the same thing.
I don't feel I did double down. I feel like he just went on slamming me.
It doesn't matter what you think about what he thinks.
It's a difference of opinion. Let's just leave it at that and move on from there.
Yeah, he thinks you doubled down. Whether or not you meant to, he's not questioning your intention. You doubled down in the wrong place, and he was just saying it was not the right place to do it. If we can agree that it was the wrong place, I totally agree with the point that you made. It's what we've all been talking about all night. He's even saying the same damn thing. It was just the wrong
format. It was the wrong way to say it in the wrong place.
Thank you.
Exactly, yes. Thank you for summing it up brilliantly.
Who? Me?
Yes, you.
I'm so drunk.
I just summed up your summary. No, that's all.
The both of you summed it up between you brilliantly. Yes, it was the wrong thing to say in the wrong place, and in a different venue could have been much better handled. And like, this is definitely not the right venue for that for this whole thing either.
I'm not in the right frame of mind for this.
I am sorry for bringing it up as well. I'm sorry.
Cool. See, now I think we're in the right frame of mind, and maybe Joe and I hit it off. We're in the right frame of mind for team building and for love and for sharing love for one another. Bridge building, excuse me. We're in the right frame of mind. I am. Joe, what about you?
Sure.
Other Joe. Yeah. All right. Well, you are a brilliant fucking diplomat, is all I can say.
Here, Joe.
Are you open to working for the British government? Because we need some.
We really, really do. Can you please talk to Europe and fix that whole situation? Because we need a good diplomat like you.
Which whole situation?
All of them, please. Yeah, don't get specific.
The cabbage situation? I thought that was already handled.
That's the one. It's a lettuce, and yeah, it's a big thing.
Oh, my favorite one was the flitshinging episode in Holland.
So y'all want to know what I just finished up?
Yep. As long as it changes the subject.
AK-74, short barrel, well, pistol technically, and a 5.56.
Cool.
Those are ridiculous.
Well, which 5.56?
Weapons.
Like, will it take the same ammo as, the M16? M4?
Yes.
Yes, that's what 5.56 is. 223 is a civilian round.
Is
5.56 is a federal, the NATO round. And 5.56 will not go into a 223, but 223 will fall into a 5.56 just fine.
Cool.
But it's still a ridiculous weapon, and I wouldn't have made
it's
the same.
It's a pistol using a rifle round, yeah.
Correct. And a rifle, well, it's short barrel, though. That's the only advantage. Short barrel, which makes it just twice as hard to control. It negates all the advantages.
So you're saying the M16 is better than the M4 because it's got a longer barrel?
No, I'm saying a rifle round without a shoulder stock is very difficult to control.
Ah, okay.
I mean, I can hold 1-inch groups at 50 yards
Oh, like so over the top of a cylinder block wall? Because that's the only place where you would want to use that weapon. Or are you standing standing up and firing?
Sorry to interrupt, but just while it's quick pause. Sorry, I'm trying to break in here with just the worst mobile connection ever. So sorry, I think I'm going to have to drop out because it's just dropping out all the time and packet loss and everything. I've just got the worst. I think everyone's just on their phones because it's New Year's Eve or whatever, even though I'm in London. Nope. So
it was great to talk to everyone. We can hear you perfectly.
Okay, well, it's kind of dropping in and out. So I'll keep listening for a bit. But it was great to talk to everyone. And speak to you, I guess, next year.
Joe, nice one last thing. If we don't speak again, I still have my question for you that I posted in the chat. It doesn't have to be here, but I got a question for you.
Oh, sorry, I'm not like it's this mobile client Plumble off F-Droid isn't great for that sort of thing. What was the question briefly?
You just answered it, actually.
Ah, was it what client I'm using?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, Plumble. Sorry, it's the client is great, but just my connection is terrible tonight. Usually it's great out here, but the number of cars and everything, it's not the client, it's my connection. I know I've had problems all night. It's just a very busy night for London. So
What are you using for Bluetooth headphones?
We have a New Year announcement. Someone needs to do a New Year announcement.
Why don't we all do it? 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Where's the time zones up?
Nobody.
Guten Rutsch, New
Year. It's still in the middle of the Atlantic.
Somewhere in the middle.
Next hour will be Atlantic time, which is New Brunswick and Newfoundland. And the hour after that is Eastern time, U.S.
Atlantic, maybe Brazil, or now, I don't know. And then I think it's Newfoundland in half an hour, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's at least an hour from now.
No, the Newfoundland.
Yeah, Newfoundland's in a half an hour.
Half hour time zone, yeah.
Oh, you halfies are so cool and weird.
And then New Brunswick and Nova Scotia are in 1 hour.
Well, I completely flubbed announcing Raleigh, North Carolina because some reason I thought it was...
A couple hours.
Yeah, I thought it was later than it is.
Oh, I thought you just mispronounced it.
I'm in the same time zone as Raleigh, and it's still 2200 here.
I mean, I thought you just mispronounced it because you were too sober.
I mean, I'm dead sober because, I've just been working on a weapon, and I don't do that drunk.
Oh, yeah. That makes policy. Sense. Actually, that's best policy. That is the best practice. It's going to be real hard to improve on that one, folks.
Improve on, yeah. But once again, I'm going to mention Iowa. Where the state sport is drinking and driving, but the hobby on the side of that is taking your rifle with you and hunting from out the window.
Wow, both of those things suck. You know what's awesome up in this neck of the woods? What we do is get drunk in the front yard, and when rednecks go flying by, like doing jumps on your street, you go whoop whoop whoop, and the 12-year-old raises a Miller Lite at you.
Yeah, that seems logical.
You know what's fun here is the local cops getting drunk and smashing up their cars.
Oh, they're El Caminos. Those cops got El Caminos.
Why would you smash up an El Camino?
They don't have El Caminos here.
Yes and, pirate. Yes and.
They're driving around in fucking Ford Explorers.
Anyways, tell me more about the pistol you made.
It's a shoulders receiver, WPP Poland parts.
What is a shoulders receiver? What is this receiver better than the stamped steel one that Kalashnikov shat out on his birthday?
Oh, it is a stamped steel one. It's just it just has a nice made in USA on it, so it's easier to deal with the regulations.
Did the made in USA get stamped into the receiver when the receiver was stamped, or is it like laser cut?
It is my understanding that the basic stamping was done in Poland as a flat, and then it was shaped here. And then this dude named this place called Childers.
Ladies and gentlemen, made in USA.
It's like anything else. Like if you do the final finishing steps in the USA, then it counts as made in the USA.
Yeah, but so that
about half the city buses in America are made in Canada. They just do the finishing work in Buffalo.
Yeah, it's like you bolt the wheels on in Buffalo, and you get the stamp made in USA on it.
Nope, that doesn't work for someone named Pirate. You said you bought it because it says it's the laser etched made in USA on it. I asked you what the advantage of it was over the one that Kalashnikov shat out on his birthday.
No, it's basically a clone.
And because he shat it out on his birthday, someone should go edit Wikipedia, and then it will become true as long as they reference us.
I thought everything in Wikipedia was true.
That's what I just said. So, Moo, you got to learn to agree with people better.
Moss.
How have you managed to get his name wrong every single time?
Because he spelled it phonetically, and it was not an M or an O or an O or an S in it.
It's Zaivala. Zaivala is the same thing as Moss. It's just in Sanskrit. So,
but it's not in.
Honestly,
I honestly didn't know how to pronounce it myself. And
all right, all right.
So. Full handle is Zaivalananda, which means Moss Bliss.
I'm changing my answer. I managed to get it wrong every time because I'm an idiot. Final answer.
Well, you sound like a very nice idiot.
Do you want to know what Sporif means?
I try to be a nice idiot. Do I know what means?
Sporif.
No, but I'd like to.
It means absolutely nothing. I made it up.
Do you know what Joe means?
Coffee.
No.
Coffee, yeah.
Well, no, actually,
it also means a GI, a American soldier.
Well, I've been that too. But no, it actually means.
And he has the bullet holes to prove it.
You got walked on, Joe. Can you say
I'm sorry.
It, Joe means gift from God.
Oh, yeah. Right on. My son's name is Jacob.
Yeah. My name is, my first name is actually Kieron, which is an Irish name, meaning the little dark one, but I'm 181 centimeters tall and blonde, so I don't know what's happening there.
Well, careful that it ain't your heart. Just don't look, you know, sleep with one eye open.
That's okay. I got my daughter Tala here, and her name means little wolf.
What is that in real inches?
It's 6'1".
Ah, not bad.
Means what? Stalking wolf. Okay, I got it wrong.
Oh, two socks, like from Dances with Wolves.
Oh, hold on. You can talk to Tala for a second. I'm going to lift some heavy things. Hold on.
Joe does a lot of weightlifting.
Hello?
Hey, Tala?
Hey.
Hi. Joe said that you're shorter because he named you Tala, and he's sorry.
He's a liar. He
That's
wouldn't
terrible.
Feel sorry for that.
Hi, Tala. It's Moss. You know me from the other podcasts.
Hi, Moss. It's a pleasure to hear you.
Thank you. Good to hear you, too.
You're the cleverest kid I've talked to all day.
Thank you. Albeit, I'm an adult now, so I'm big.
Well, for your age, I meant. I talked to an 8-year-old who was just brilliant also. For your age, then.
Thank you, sir. So what kind of lies has my father been telling you? I gotta figure some stuff out here.
Oh no, sorts. We're not gonna give that up on Joe.
He said software shouldn't be free with a capital F. He said only with a lowercase f.
Repeat that?
He said that software software should only be free with a lowercase f, but never with a capital F.
Yeah, he said Linux sucks and he's using Windows.
It
makes
Windows,
even less
Mother?
Sense when you understand it.
He spelled Windows without a Z. That was the lie he told.
What a horrible person.
Well, no, we
hey,
forgive him.
Hey, he's your father. You got to forgive him.
No, he's on the path.
Know.
He's on the path to redemption.
He's on the path to redemption.
We're working with him. Even if you don't forgive him now, just at least wait till we're done with him.
Well, now he's just on the weight bench, which is not quite the path to redemption.
I don't know. He's pretty enough to get away with it.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to be on the weight bench if Moss is your spotter. He is not, we'll say, physically reliable for that situation.
Too old for that.
They're slandering you.
No, I'm too old for it, too. You don't want me to be there, neither. No, I'm blessed. And this guy's a sweetheart.
It's only slander if it's a lie.
Have I heard your voice before, my dear?
Probably. I tend to try and interrupt his peacetime, which is mostly when he talks to you.
Would you be the not tall person?
Yes, I am the rather short person with the tall name.
Yes, she's named Talia, so she got short. Okay, then he owes you an apology. How about that?
We'll just call you Shorty.
That's good.
I have been delighted by hearing, I believe, Joe or somebody cut out a recording of your voice and gave it to me some years ago. Unfortunately, it's not on this system.
Oh, you're talking about my sister.
Can I?
The one where it's the I am short?
It's hard to keep track of all the beauties in your family, you know.
Oh, you're going to make me pledge.
That was the idea.
Now, if you ever tell that to my sister.
Did he give his both ironic names?
I am a...
preemptively?
I'm on the East Coast, so I think we're at a safe distance for platonic relationship.
I feel like that works. I think my dad might, you know, get a little angry at any other way. He's like, as long as they're two states away.
Yo, Netminer, East Coast is all on the same tectonic plate. So those platonic relationships are still really, really like self-incriminating when dads are looking.
But Joe's in Texas. That doesn't count.
Yeah, sorry. Texas is like a cryptid. We're stuck here.
No, well, that's cool. So there's at least a divide of behaviorism.
So the thing to do is to move up to Seattle and join the gay Greater Pacific Northwest polycule.
But it's so Seattle.
No, it's so hazy and gloomy in Seattle all the time. If the weather was nice, I'd get it. But seriously, that's the hill you want to die on?
I mean, yeah, especially the gay polycule.
In Vancouver that keep talking about how nice it is, and I'm going, it's right next to Seattle. It can't be that nice.
Well, but it is sometimes. I've seen pictures.
Well,
yeah, half the year it's gorgeous.
Vancouver at least is sane. Seattle is questionable.
Well, instead of bashing on places, who's got any more funny name stuff?
Well, we have called my sister a fair few funny names. Am I allowed to share them? One of them was Poop and Princess Potty Pants, so...
Hey, that was mine! She stole that! I guarantee you I'm older than her!
Don't try her! She'll time travel and fight you for it!
I know retroactive time travel scalability in the obverse winning position. You always always have to let the villain think they're winning.
If you want a funny name, I went to school with a guy called Adam Schittler. No, I'm not joking.
At least it wasn't Adolf.
Oh,
I think it was in about the locker room. I'm sure.
Yeah, that poor fella.
I'm sure his dad was sat there with the babe in arms just going, please. And his mom was like, no, please. No, fine, Adam then.
No, wait a minute. What about on the altar? Like, hey, baby, I know we have a proud, long Schittler history to uphold here, but can we at least hyphenate? Like, pineapple hyphen Schittler? Can... something.
Yeah.
Adam Pineapple Schittler.
Okay.
Son, the first of your name.
Schittler Charlin, just like you wanted.
Miss,
I want the Enterprise level. I don't want the Econobox one of those. I want the Enterprise.
I thought the Enterprise was like in dry dock.
Too many threads.
No. Sorry, I'm talking to my dad. I couldn't hear you for
We're
a second.
Sorry you're talking to your dad too, but we understand.
Have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.